Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Joseph Rigney to the podcast. Dr. Rigney serves as assistant professor of theology and literature at Bethlehem College and Seminary. However, he was recently elected to become the second president of BCS. Additionally, he serves as a pastor at Cities Church there in St. Paul, Minnesota. He just published a new book, More Than a Battle, How to Experience Victory, Freedom, and Healing from Lust. Dr. Rigney, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thanks for having me. I'm very, very glad to be here.
Yeah, listen, I have been looking forward to this podcast for some time, and we'll be talking, for our listeners, we'll be talking today about the pastor and holiness and building that conversation largely from your recently released book, More Than a Battle, out with B&H Publishers. And a book that I have read and have benefited from and appreciated so much. And so I look forward to reviewing with you some of his contents and just broader lessons and points of application for our listeners. And so we'll get back to that in a minute or two. But first, listen, a word of update for our listeners on you and your family, and then especially BCS and how the Lord's called you into the next season of leadership there.
Yeah, that's great. So I've been married now for 15 years, my wife, Jenny. We are both native Texans and have been living in exile in Minnesota. We're that rare breed of, Texasotan. We put jalapenos in our hot dish. But we've been up here 15 years, came up here for seminary and have stuck around. We have three boys, 11, 9, and 2. And we're looking forward to baseball season coming up here in a couple of months, getting back out and play a little ball. We've been a pastor at Cities Church for the last 6 years. We planted Cities Church out of Bethlehem Baptist 6 years ago, and so I get to pastor with my closest friends, and it's just a great joy to do that. I preach semi-regularly, once a month or so over the last 6 years. So I kind of have the best of both worlds. I've been a professor by day and a pastor by night. And so it's been a real joy to kind of have all of the range of the gifts that the Lord's given me and be able to exercise those there. And then God has graciously led me and led the trustees of Bethlehem College and Seminary to become the second president effective June 1st of this year. And so I'm looking forward to this next season of ministry. Got a lot of exciting things planned. Some new hires coming down the way and all of that sort of stuff. But Bethlehem, I love Bethlehem College and Seminary. It's God's been very good in helping us to build undergrad and seminary programs that are built on Christian hedonism, that offer an education in serious joy, rigorous reading of texts, whether it's the great books or the greatest book, the Bible, and all for the sake of the Great Commission. That's kind of what we're about. And so I'm very excited to take the helm here in about 3 months.
Yeah, well, good for you. And as we were talking briefly before the recording began, rooting for you and for our friends there at BCS, and that we do have many friends there, and see you guys as a sister institution and performing and fulfilling a strategic ministry work there in Minnesota. Now, I'll tell you mentioned baseball season starting. I have to ask, when do the fields get cleared enough, and when does it get warm enough for baseball season as an outdoor activity to begin up there?
Yeah, that usually doesn't happen until mid to late April, probably. But in the meantime, we do it in gyms and basements and wherever we can do it to get ready for the season, so that when we get out, when it finally thaws, and it not just has to thaw, and then you got to get rid of the water. The water's got to go too. Then we can finally get out there and get on the field. So usually about mid to late April when we're finally out on the field.
Well, good for you. Well, listen, we're talking today about the pastor and holiness. As I've already mentioned, you have a new book out, More Than a Battle, How to Experience Victory, Freedom, and Healing from Lust. And look, you begin the book, and I guess as an entry point for our conversation today, with a touch of your own story, and perhaps share a word or two about that for our listeners.
Yeah. So, like many young men, I struggled. I talk about the book. Struggled means I lost badly in the fight for holiness as a young teenager. Was exposed to pornography and really was neck deep in that for a large portion of my teenage years. And it really wasn't until right before I got married that the Lord did a great work in my life. Totally through Him. But then the means he used were my impending marriage, that there was a sort of a new incentive, right? Love for my wife and desire to seek her good and to love her well was animating, as well as just some wise counselors who kind of came alongside me in that season and were able to kind of pinpoint some hidden drivers of what was leading me in a sinful direction. And so God did this great work, and it's been a night and day difference for the last 15 plus years. And so over the course of that time, so since then, I've counseled college students as a professor. I've counseled men in my church, husbands and fathers, through this issue, one-on-one in groups, different things like that. I've led seminars, at Bethlehem years ago, and then again at Cities when we planted. And so this is something I've thought a lot about. And what I discovered was kind of that what I was doing in trying to help guys and what God had used to help me didn't really fit neatly into any one bucket of approach. And so it was somewhat eclectic. It really tried to take into account layers of complexity in what's going on with our lustful desires and pornography and things like that. And so at some point I decided, you know, I've been teaching on this. I really want to get this down in some way that could be more beneficial to the wider church. And so from that, More Than a Battle was born.
So give us a little bit of an insight into your own progression, and not so much the season of life when you were struggling or not struggling with the issues of pornography and all that goes with it, but more so from the mentor side. And of course, in your book, you have different sections speaking directly to those who are mentoring or coaching or shepherding individuals as they're working through these matters. What from the mentor side of things did you learn or experience that really additionally prompted you to write this book?
Yeah, well, that is, I think, one of the major things that I'm trying to get at is that, personal holiness is a community project. This isn't something that we do alone. And I think it was in hindsight after I realized that, you know, after God had delivered me, I realized what he had used to do it. And a big part of it was key mentors in my life, that pastors who were counseling me, the guy who did our premarital counseling was hugely influential. And the thing that... the way I formulate it now, looking back, and what I try to model for other guys, is it was this rare, it was what I called gospel presence. And gospel presence is this certain sort of way of carrying yourself rooted in what Jesus has done for us. But it's a way of approaching other people, other men who might be struggling. And there's sort of a twofold dimension to it. On the one hand, there's what I call a compassionate stability. And basically what that was, this was so influential for me back when God was delivering me, was when I would confess to my pastor, he was not thrown by what I was saying. When I would confess the deep, dark secrets, and when I bring it to light, the shame and the guilt and everything, there wasn't a recoil or a runaway or an ick. It was instead he leaned in. And he communicated by his facial expressions, by the way he carried himself, that God was for me and with me, and therefore he was for me and with me. And that was just massively stabilizing in the midst of all of the turmoil of both, lust and anxiety and shame and guilt and the whole mix. But then the other thing that he did was he didn't just lean in sort of with this, I'm for you, but it was I'm so for you that I'm not going to let you stay here. And so there was this real kind of focused hostility toward me and my sin and a wise approach to kind of think through and untangle the hidden springs of our desires and how the layers of personality and family formation and all these sort of things were feeding into this struggle. And there was just and he wouldn't let me off. He would just drill in. And I think in both ways, he was really modeling for me what Jesus is like and who Jesus is. Because Jesus is for us and with us totally 100%. God is for us and with us because of what Jesus has done. But that's it's not indulgent and it's not soft. It's painful. He loves us so much he won't leave us in the mire. And so that's a big part of trying to commend to mentors. You have a massively important role by God's grace in the lives of men around you. And so you want to rely upon the Lord for it, and then actively seek to bring that compassionate stability and that focused hostility, that gospel presence.
So for ministers listening to our conversation today, and who are seeking to shepherd church members, and in particular men, through this issue, and for that matter, let's be, you know, acknowledge the fact that so many ministers are embroiled in their own, you know, oftentimes private struggle in this regard. But especially for those who are seeking to mentor young men, I guess, you know, it'll often be said something like this, like, well, this is such a common struggle and every man struggle. And then you have pornography and smartphones and all these things come so near to us to where you don't have to go out of your way to procure pornographic imagery. You have to go out of your way to stop yourself from being exposed to pornographic imagery. And a part of that logic or that teaching or that kind of counseling has been this awareness, the group awareness that this is so prevalent, it's everywhere. And how do you balance communicating that with, on the one hand, you know, in a sense, inadvertently justifying the struggle or lack of struggle with men? You know, everyone struggles with this, therefore it's okay for you to struggle with it. But on the other hand, saying, no, this is such a prevalent issue, a lot of people are struggling with it. Here's how you need to guard your heart not to fall victim to this matter.
Yeah, that's right. And those, you just described perfectly the twin dangers. One is that indulgence that says, well, it's common to man, and so it's common, we're just going to leave it and keep it common, and not fight. And then the other is a kind of, you can create a certain kind of culture where it's so shameful that everybody struggles alone, and hidden sins kill Christians because they're hidden. Like, that's why you can't bring them out and address them together, because there's so much shame associated with it. And so that's where the mentor, especially, and the pastor, in trying to create a certain kind of environment in his counseling room and then in the wider church of bring whatever you have, bring all of it, and we're not going to run away, but we aren't going to let you keep it, because Jesus doesn't want you to keep it. And the Bible uses really strong, violent imagery for how we should approach sin, right? If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off, and you know, put to death the deeds of the body. If you live according to the flesh, you will die. Flee sexual immorality. All of these terms are so strong, and they communicate a violent hostility towards sin. And so you want to bring that with you. But you want to do it from a, I'm so for you. I'm in your corner. I want what's best for you. God wants what's best for you. And this is destroying you, and it's destroying your marriage. It's destroying your future. And so there's ways of communicating the gravity of the sin so that nobody takes it lightly, but to do so in a way that's fundamentally seeking the good of the person in front of you.
You know, my mind races back to my high school and adolescent and college years. And I came of age, and I'm a little bit older than you, Joe, a few years, but I came of age like in the 90s and graduated from high school in 95, college in 99. And so I barely missed at the personal level in those teen and college years, you know, the full explosion of the internet. Yeah. And, you know, I remember as a kid, a neighborhood kid, you had a kid or two whose dads had these magazines and things, and they would shuffle them around. But as far as just the internet explosion, all that came with it, I barely missed that by a few years. Now, yeah. I remember in college, I became a believer my freshman year in college. But in college, you know, there was a computer lab, and kids typically didn't have computers in their room, at least the kids I knew in college. We'd go to the computer lab to type a paper. And I remember one day I was in the computer lab as whatever sophomore, junior in college, and a friend of mine said, you know what that guy in the back of the room is doing? And I said, no idea what. And he said, you can tell he's looking at pornography. And I said, I remember I was just like, what? And he said, yeah, because the guy was like in the corner with the computer like screen turned towards the corner, so no one's behind him, so he has this little isolated view. And I remember I was like, get out of here. Are you serious? He said, yeah. And I remember just like my mind being blown that was that accessible and that he would do it. Right. And then I remember a couple of years later now, I'm in ministry, still a young man in my early to mid-20s, and I have a college student come in my office, and I am in a conversation. He starts talking about pornography, and he says, well, it's on my computer. And I just say to him rather casually, I said, well, you need to like get rid of your computer. I said, you need to move your computer from your bedroom to the family room, and so you cut off that access. And I remember he acted as though that was just this draconian measure, you know, like, why would you require that of me? And I'm like, whatever, 24, he's, you know, 20. So I'm not exactly, I'm barely an older brother there, but not by much. And to me, it was just kind of commonsensical. And okay. And then he comes back a week later or a week or two later and kind of still this struggle. Well, have you moved the computer yet? No. And I just told myself, you're not serious about this. You're just wasting my time. Right. If you don't take this basic step to move your computer from your upstairs, bedroom to your family room. And in your book, you talk about that a lot, not that specific illustration, of course, but just practical steps that one can take to remove these portals of pornography. Can you flesh those out a little bit for us?
Yeah. So the basic thing when I have guys come to meet with me, frequently it's because they feel real guilty because they've been failing badly. And one of the first things I'm trying to determine is just how serious they are. There's that famous quote from Augustine who said when he was a young man, he would pray, Lord, give me purity, but not yet.
Right.
And a lot of guys act that way. Like, Lord, lead me not to temptation, but I'm kind of going to make it easy to fall into temptation. I'm going to continue to dance on the edges. I'm going to keep carrying fire next to my chest and just hope I don't get burned. And I really want to kind of explode that. And so one of the ways I do it is to gauge seriousness is do exactly what you did instinctively as a 24-year-old, which is to say, well, just cut that off. If your right hand's causing you to sin, just cut it off. Jesus uses violent imagery, and all I'm talking about is moving the computer in the other room. Or you don't ever get on the internet by yourself. You go to an internet cafe, you go to a coffee shop, and you get on the internet. Or you've got a smartphone, get a dumb phone. And you're right that I think today the technology is so ubiquitous that people think that just sounds crazy, but there is this real sense of like, well, how much is your holiness worth to you? Are you only here because you have some guilt feelings and you know they'll go away and this is just to kind of get you through? Or do you really want to pursue the joy of the Lord and the holiness of God for yourself? In which case these kind of drastic in quotes, right? This is cutting off your hand. This is like cutting off your fingernails, like cutting off, getting rid of the, no Netflix, get rid of your Facebook account, whatever that kind of, what seems like a drastic step is a really important one because it communicates to other people like the counselor and it communicates to yourself. I really want to be done with this. I want to make progress in holiness. And that's a major step. And so I insist on it. Otherwise there's no reason for me to try to wrestle through more stuff. If the real basic, artificial boundary, because it doesn't solve it completely. The heart's still there. You still have your desires. You still have your imagination, and you may have stored up all kinds of images there over the years, but let's not keep pouring fuel on the fire. Let's shut off the gas, and then let's try to deal with the real issue. And so I think that's a fundamental step for mentors to gently, but clearly and firmly say, here's the boundary we're going to put in place so that we can create some space, and then we're going to tackle this sin that clings so closely.
Again, today we're talking primarily to pastors, those engaged in local church ministry. And in your book, you obviously speak to them as well. And you talk about their need to be exemplars of personal holiness. Make the case for pastors listening to our conversation today why that's so important.
Yeah, at a very basic level, you can't export what you don't have. You can't call someone to holiness if you're unwilling to pursue holiness for yourself. And it's a great tragedy. I know that, I've seen it with dads in particular who feel like their sons are growing up and their sons are entering this age of unprecedented access and, everybody has a brothel in their pocket and they're concerned about what their kids are going to do, but they're just not even in any place where they would even know how to help them because they themselves are still overcome and enslaved and failing. And so a major incentive here is if you want, as a pastor or as a father, if you want to be able to spare, I don't want my sons to go through what I went through. I don't want their adolescence and their teenage years to be like mine. I want theirs to be different. And so I'm committed for myself to pursue Jesus and his holiness and sanctification and killing my sin, mainly because I want to love Jesus, but then subordinately because I want to be in a position to actually help my sons. I want them to be, to have wisdom and grace and mercy reigning in their homes and holiness, is the air we breathe, so that when they face these challenges, they know that they can add or come to other men in our church and they can get help when they face their own struggles. And so it's massively important. I remember in high school, one of the main reasons I think I struggled for so long is the accountability groups that I was in were basically big puddles of sin. No, all of us were struggling. All of us were, and by struggling, I mean losing badly. And none of us knew what to do. None of us knew how to get out of it. And so they ended up being these sort of, you know, venting sessions where we'd come, I fell again, me too. I fell too. And you just looked around and you said, well, I guess it's hopeless. And part of what changed was when I actually had a pastor who wasn't struggling, he was able to look at me and call me to something that I didn't even know was possible. He was able to say, no, it really is possible for you not to be enslaved to this. And I just thought, really? And of course, as a single guy, I'm thinking, that's easy for you to say, you're married. But that's not even the main issue, right? There's a fundamental heart issue because it follows you into marriage if you don't kill it before. But his example and his modeling of like, I'm a great sinner, but Jesus is a great savior. And there's hope. You can aspire to this was massively helpful and influential for my own struggle.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. That's very well put. For those listening to this conversation who are pastors, and let's say they are in some ways struggling with their own, let's say, dabblings into pornography. Help them to rightly diagnose even where they are. And by that, I mean this. How do you, the person who, whatever, is on social media and then once in a blue moon, you know, they get followed by a bot or something and images come through that are inappropriate. So you have one extreme that's living a relatively pure life, but, you know, life happens. Things pop up before them.
Yep.
And then the other extreme, people that are just living a double, you know, living a lie and they're deeply engaged in pornography and it's a part of their day-to-day life. And then you have various people in between. And unfortunately, some of those are ministers. How should our listeners even think of that compendium and where people are and how they should even process that, even in relation to their own fitness for ministry and to what extent their conscience should be weighed heavy by all of this?
Yeah. So I think that there's a layers here to get into, and the specifics obviously do matter because there is a major range between the guy who's, you know, struggling at the level of double takes and internet pop-ups and trying to control his imagination and his thoughts, and the guy who's looking at pornography, you know, every week or something like that. And it's a continual struggle there. So in the latter case, I do think we have to face the fact that Paul says to us that one of the qualifications for ministry in the book of Titus is self-control, uprightness, and holiness. Like, that's a basic qualification. And if you don't meet it, you're not qualified.
Right.
And so that includes our sexual purity, which means you can disqualify yourself, not merely because you cheated on your wife with another woman, but because you looked at pornography consistently. Now, I don't know that they're exactly the same. There's different, you got to have wisdom in different situations did he go one time versus it a persistent habit? All of those things do matter given the nature of the sin. But it is a disqualifying for ministry. And I think of that for my own sake. I don't want to disqualify. I love preaching. I love teaching. And I use that as a motivation, one motivation. It's a God-given one so that I can change the channel when my mind starts to wander. And so I do think that's the thing. I think another piece that I would bring in here is the importance of accountability from men who are going to be as hard on you as your wife is.
Hmm.
And I say it that way because I advocate in the book, I don't think that a wife should be her husband's primarily accountability partner on this particular sin, because I think that the men and women operate differently. And there's just a gap between being able to understand why is it that you struggle in this way. And she needs to be brought in at some level, but in terms of your primary accountability, it needs to be other qualified men. If you're a pastor, that probably means the other elders on your team. And if you don't have those men, you need to get them. Here's a plug for plurality right there. And so have other men. And so that when you begin to struggle, when the first motions, when your mind's wandering and you're having things like that, do you have men that you can go to and say, hey, pray for me. I want to be transparent. I want you to feel free to ask questions. I want to let you in. If I stumble and fall in a deliberate way, I want to bring that to you and ask, you know, and I want to confess it to God first. I walk through a fairly clear kind of progression that I think is healthy and good. You confess it to God first because your sin is fundamentally against Him. Then
right.
You bring it to other men for the sake of wisdom and accountability. Like, are there things that you need to do differently in order to make sure it doesn't happen again? Do you need to be exhorted in certain ways? And then if it was grievous enough, then you need to probably, if you're married, you need to bring your wife in, and you need to do that to restore your covenant bonds with her. It's a breach for you to wander in that way. And so And so I think that kind of, but first you get right with God, then you get counsel and wisdom and exhortation from other men, and then you bring it to your wife. And I think that that progression is really important, because otherwise guys get those out of order. They don't go to God first, they go to their wife first, and then it's a big blow up and it's a big mess. But I think that accountability is fundamental to making sure that you're not too hard on yourself. In other words, you're just beating yourself up because of double takes all the time, and therefore your effectiveness and joy in ministry is diminished. And at the same time, that you're not too lenient on yourself, that you're not giving yourself a pass because you think, well, everybody does it, and what can I do?
Well, Dr. Rigney, I want to thank you again for the conversation today and for your book, More Than a Battle, How to Experience Victory, Freedom, and Healing from Lust, out by B&H Publishers. And Dr. Rigney, every best wish for the ministry season ahead of you as you will soon be leading Bethlehem College and Seminary. May the Lord richly bless you as you do.
Thanks so much. Same to you.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.